This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 248 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
You know, I've got nothing to talk about, so it's been lovely chatting with you. I'll see you next week.
Fantastic. See ya.
Have a good night, everybody. Bye.
Happy Australia Day, by the way.
Oh, yes. Happy Invasion Day.
Nice. Not that it's Australia Day as we're recording, but on the day that this podcast comes out, it will be.
It's the day the day white man invaded Australia.
That's exactly right, yeah.
If you saw, for those not in our country, one of our major retail chains had to pull down a whole range of merchandise for our Australia Day celebrations, which was Australia established 1788. Well, not according to the Aboriginals, it wasn't. We've been here tens of thousands of years.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit culturally insensitive.
So what was that story? I missed that.
Well, all these T-shirts coming out for Australia, they have a big Australian flag and Australia established 1788.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't really. Well, maybe the name was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know when Australia was actually called Australia for the first time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a little culturally insensitive to say that everything started when we arrived.
Yeah. You know? Just a touch.
So, yes, happy Australia Day, which, of course, means any excuse for a long weekend for those who are around. We should, of course, have had something to talk about firework photography if it's a, yeah.
We should have. We should have, but we haven't.
It's just going to be a little bit of bad luck. We recommend YouTube firework photography. There you go. Have fun with that, people.
Don't say we don't give you anything.
Exactly. We try very hard to give you as little as possible.
And if we give you too much, we always apologize for it.
I'm sorry, that was a mistake. So how's your week been, my friend?
Interesting. Kath said to me on Wednesday,
I've got something to tell you. Is that what she said?
Along those lines.
Honey, we need to talk. Yeah. That's always a scary
I've got a surprise for you.
Oh, dear. Here
and I went, oh, okay.
This is Bob, my other lover. It's a hell of a surprise.
And she said, is your camera charged? And I went, oh, yeah? And she went, okay, good. We'll need it after dinner. And I went, oh, okay.
Hello.
So anyway, after dinner, we've all jumped in the car and we've gone down to, headed down towards Terrigal Beach. And I said to her, I said, now, what do I need? You know, what am I shooting? She goes, oh, you'll find out when we get there. And I said, well, what gear do I need? Do I need a tripod? And she said, yeah, probably. I said, do I need a softbox? She goes, no, I don't think so. I went, okay.
Softbox was? Sorry? Did you explain what a softbox was?
Oh, she knows. So anyway, it turns out that down at Terrigal Beach, and I had known about this and I'd just completely forgotten it, there is a group of amateur fire twirlers who practice on the beach on a Wednesday night.
Nice.
Yeah, so we went down there and you know, she knows that I've sort of been in this bit of a funk where I just really haven't been shooting anything.
That's P-H-U-N-K, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, photo funk. Yeah,
that's the one. Where I haven't really been doing any creative photography. I've been, shooting family events and that sort of thing, but nothing about just getting out there and being creative for the sake of it, you know.
Yeah.
And, so we went down there and, of course, I didn't have a softbox and sort of once I got there wished I had and it was trying desperately hard to rain and it was just getting heavier and heavier with the rain and before I knew it, front element of the lens was covered in raindrops, and so there was all this lovely bouquet of raindrops on the front lens.
Lovely.
So, I snapped a few shots, and they were ordinary, but it's not something I'd ever tried to shoot before, and I thought I'd bring it up now because I wouldn't mind picking your brains because I figure you've done this kind of shoot before, and I was wondering what your approach to it is. Like what I was doing was going with a sort of 3 to 4 second shutter speed, you know, and a sort of middle of the range depth of field, you know, sort of 5.6, 6.7. And off camera flash and just holding it up above my head, you know, the flash that is. And but I found that the fire twirlers themselves, their bodies were moving a hell of a lot, and so when the flash went off, I was getting a lot of blur, and I wasn't really getting a solid image of them from the flash. So maybe I didn't have enough flash dialed in. I don't know. But anyway, yeah. So I just sort of pick your brains on it.
Well, the first thing is flash placement was a problem as far as I'm concerned. It really should have been off. But ideally, I'd like to have it on the other side of the flames. So, yeah, 90 degrees to between me and the shooter, effectively. So they're sat there doing like an O circle twirl.
Yep.
Yeah, as an example. I want the flash on the other side. So I'm not trying to fire through the flash at them. I'm firing from behind the flash at 90 degrees to them, for starters. So it's unencumbered. It's not going to have arms in the way. It's not going to have, you know, body parts that might be going in front of the light and therefore throwing horrible shadows and so on.
Right.
So first up, this lighting location. Secondly, if you've got a lot of movement, and it depends on how much flame there is. This is half the problem as well, because the flame has its own ambient light, yep, which will light the subject, which will cause a certain amount of lit movement.
Right.
That's kind of unavoidable.
Yep.
When the flash fires, the flash will freeze where the subject is at that one moment.
Yes.
But you'll still have that orange blur around it,
yep,
because the body was there and lit for a period of time. So you'll have this sort of haloing orange blur to some degree, depending on how much they move.
Right.
But if you're not getting that solid frozen image, then you didn't have enough flash power in.
Right.
So okay. you didn't do your math.
Probably not. Like I said, it was all a bit of a rush, you know, because I didn't know what I was going down there for. And
oh, for sure. So your brain's not in it. So you've still got to get your exposure right for the flash. You don't want it too bright. You don't want it too dark.
Yep.
And you know, you want it just right. You want a Goldilocks, as I like to call it.
Yep.
Just right. And so do your math and get the exposure right. And it should be. But so what? Yeah, I try and instruct these guys as little as possible. Try not to move your torso. You know, try and keep it as rigid as you can.
Yep.
And move the elements you need to. Try and explain the process to them about where the light's going to be coming from, where the camera is, how their movement's going to look if they move too much. Yeah,
right.
Try and make a bit of a collaboration, and then take enough shots that some of them work.
Yeah, right.
Because you're talking about moving flames. They're going to sometimes have to move whether they want to or not, you know, the wind or whatever.
So what sort of shutter speed would you normally be shooting with that?
Look, once again, depending on what type of lighting they're doing, but 3 or 4 seconds is probably about average.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I want enough light to get both some ambient light coming through the background.
Yep.
So that might be somewhere 3 to 5 seconds, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And then I need enough time for movement of the flame. Now, depending on exactly what movement they're doing, that might be anywhere from 1 second to 5 seconds, depending on what type of maneuver they're doing.
Yeah, right.
Now, you can imagine something is spinning really fast, moves a long way in 2 seconds.
Yep.
Something that's a bigger arc is not going to move anywhere near as much in 2 seconds. Yeah. So it does fluctuate. But yeah, somewhere in that 3 to 5 second zone is fairly comfortable. The problem, of course, the longer the exposure, and the brighter the flames, the bigger the problem of the blurred. Because you've got more time for that ambient light, for the flames to light the subject.
Yep.
This is not good, bro. This is actually sounding like a proper photo talk all of a sudden.
It's sounding
a bit realized too. We've started off on a high note. It's all just going to fall in a heap from here.
It's all downhill from here.
What have you done to us? we should quit now whilst we're ahead.
Yes.
But that makes sense. That's reasonably clear as far as a little bit of experimentation with time. And of course, as I like shooting these things just as the sun's hitting, just dropped behind the horizon, so it's still reasonably bright.
Yeah.
And then I'll extend my shutter speed as the light
diminishes.
As it
gets darker. Yeah.
Just to build, keep that ambient at a reasonably constant constant level.
That was the thing. I mean, we were a little bit late getting down there. Yeah. It was sort of 8:30-ish by the time we got down there, so probably needed to be there an hour to a half or 45 minutes earlier,
which
we'll do next week. Oh yeah, and absolutely. And now that I know that, you know, we'll probably go down next Wednesday night. Hopefully it won't be raining, and I'll be in the right headspace, and I'll know what I'm in for, and
But just make sure you do your flash math and get that exposure right, because if you don't get, if you're not hitting them with enough juice from the flash, you're not going to freeze them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You need to get that exposure, just so. So calculate that beforehand,
Yeah, for get sure. Get
all that, okay, it needs to be 4 meters away or 12 feet away. Bang, just go put it there, whatever. Get all that in your head before you go.
Yep.
No, keep your aperture the constant all the way through the shoot. That way your flash can stay at the same distance all
that's
the
shoot. Right.
All you do is play around with shutter speed.
Yep.
You've got one element to deal with, and that's it. And that keeps it simple,
Nice.
And then the other thing, of course, you could try and do, depending on the type of shot that thing they're doing, is fire multiple single bursts of flash during the exposure and get multiple versions of them in the shot.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So maybe extend, as it gets darker, extend your shutter speed out to 8 seconds or so and do, say, 3 or 4 bursts of flash and see what kind of multi-headed beasts you can come out. it can be kind of cool. You can get some really unusual effects. Once you've got a few safe ones in the bag and you're pretty happy, then experiment.
Yep.
Cool. So to me, that unpredictability of the experimentation is the majority of the fun I have in photo these days.
Yeah, right.
I kind of know what the shot's going to look like, and most of the time it works. And that's, whilst that's great, it's also a bit boring, it's when stuff happens that you don't expect. You're trying stuff out, like multiple flashes. You could get something great out of it.
Yep.
Yes, it's kind of accidental that the end result looks good, but it's done with deliberate meaning to try and achieve a result. So it's a bit of luck, but it's also deliberate luck. You're chasing serendipity again, I like to call it.
Right.
You're trying something in the hope that something cool is going to happen, but the thing you're trying, you're doing with intent, with knowledge of what could happen, and wow, and actually did. Isn't that cool? What an ass. all that kind of stuff. So have fun with that, and we want to see some photos.
Yeah, definitely. Now, sorry, just recap again, the position. What were you saying about the position of the fire twirler?
Okay, so you think about,
because I was shooting basically front onto them.
Yeah, and that's, you shooting front on, that's fine. You can shoot from anywhere. It's where your light comes from.
Right, you're saying sidelight them.
Sidelight, but from behind where the flames are. So if they've got, if they're facing you with their arms out, flinging the thing, I want it sort of halfway up the arm. I don't want the light crossing over their arm. Because as their arm moves and the flash fires, it could be firing horrible shadows onto all sorts of parts of the body.
Right.
I really want a 90-degree light coming down and almost sculpting them. I don't want it quite that far around. I want to be able to still light the face. But I'll often have, whilst I might have the torso facing me, I might have the face pointing towards the flash.
Right, I'm with you.
The flash is looking off and being lit with drama and interest because you're getting light and shadows. The light's going across the torso so you can shape and form.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, you don't have to battle the arm as well. So by throwing light across that moving object.
So what you're saying is from the camera position, you want your light maybe around 100 to 110 degrees. So a bit further than 90 degrees.
Well, I really want it 90, but almost like an L. So if you can imagine like an L shape, you're one end of the L.
Yeah.
The twill is the
apex.
That too. And the flash is on the other L. So it is 90 degrees or in that slightly. But
behind where the flames are.
So if you imagine if he's got an extended arm, normally they have their arms reasonably extended because they don't want the flame to. So if they've got an arm's length out in front of them where the flame is, I want that flash a little bit more towards his face than towards the flash. A little bit
than towards the fire, you mean?
Yeah, that's sort of towards the fire.
Yeah, right.
So I want it sort of halfway down the arm. So I'm throwing it across the body and across the face.
Okay.
Not sort of battling that shadow, that weirdness from the arm and so on.
Yeah, right.
And once again, it also gives me more shadow play, and shadow gives me shape and form.
Okay.
So that's all good stuff,
Cool. Yeah. All right. I will experiment with that next Wednesday.
And we should apologize up early now that we've given this advice out early. And we take no responsibility for the accuracy or inaccuracy of any information provided on this podcast.
That's right. Our legal department required us to.
But I tell you what, since we've jumped in with all this awesome information.
Yeah.
I was reading a tutorial today on product photography.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, it's 8 steps. It's called a complete product photography tutorial in 8 steps.
Right.
So I thought, well, Sims, you're already on the topic of helpful, useful advice. That's what we should call the episode: helpful, useful advice for once.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I'd point out some of the tips I got from this 8 steps. I thought might be of use for those who want to do product photography
for sure.
So here we go. Wrong lighting may affect the colour and or the texture of the product negatively. As a result, the best solution for taking the photo of a product is to make use of the macro setting.
What?
Right, you've got a problem with that. Now, here's one of my favourites.
Is this the guy that wrote that book that we talked about a while back?
No, but I reckon he could write his own. Now, okay. Here's another great tip. Fix the lighting in the right way.
Nice.
Open the curtains wider or move around the lamps to get sufficient light. You should let in as much light as possible, depending, of course, on whether you want a feel of natural or artificial light. For a while, I was thinking this was written by a man with English as a third language. But his first name's Tristan, and I think that's probably fairly explanatory in itself.
We just lost every listener called Tristan.
So we're down to 8 again? SLR cameras have single-lens reflex system, and they are the professional ones.
Oh, you are kidding. Was this for real?
This is for real.
This is an April Fool's joke?
No. It came out September. Geez. After setting up the lighting, turn on the camera and change the setting to macro. I think the turn on the camera is the best tip so far. I love this. Fix up the detachable flash. Fix up the detachable flash. Attach it to the top of your camera and turn it on with the help of power button placed on the flash.
Nice.
No, that's a tip. That's a good tip right there. Yeah. Turn it on using the on button.
Are we up to 8 yet?
I found. Oh, I'm just taking the key points out of the 8 tips.
Right. Okay.
I've really thought. Yeah, that I've had a problem with flash for years. I'm running a flash workshop tomorrow. I can't tell you how much this has helped me. You turn the flash on with the on switch. I've been to every workshop. I'm pulling my hair out. I can't figure out why it's not coming on. What the hell's going wrong? And I bang it around. Eventually, it just
you comes prayed on. To the flash gods and they didn't answer.
I just kind of bash it around and stuff. And eventually, the thing seemed to turn on. And now I know why. I must have knocked the on button. This is probably the final tip. I think is probably the best one. I'd have to say is keep on changing the exposure till the product looks perfect when photographed. Now, you know, this.
Follow these tips, and you too.
I may have said last week that those people sending out those awesome photographs that other people are doing is what's the problem with the internet, because it shows off all the cool stuff that we can't do. No, this, my friend, is what's wrong with
you. Yes, exactly.
This right here is major problem. So... funnily enough, completely aside from that, I came out with 5 quotes of myself today.
Right.
Before I'd even read this. So it's, but I thought these are quotes that seem to come up a lot, especially on the internet about photography. And, I think these are in no particular order, I might add, not the top 5 or anything like that. But, number one, mine's bigger than yours. Very common photographic debate and issue going on the internet. Yeah, mm-hmm. Whose is bigger? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number two, yeah, but my lens has got a red ring. that's a big thing. Number three, of course I take good photos. Have you seen my camera? One of my personal favorites, of course, is, but it said it on the internet. Yes. And as we've just seen from our top tips for product photography, therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
And what would have to be my personal favourite would be, my models never seem to be able to hold my lens resolution chart steady enough for me to tell if my photos are sharp or not. That in itself explains the internet.
Yeah.
Intuitively, that and our friend Tristan and his top 8. I have to thank him because, you know, it was it kind of made my afternoon, you know. having a bit of a chortle and, obviously aimed at the slight beginner. Yeah. But here's this. Yeah, a little bit of his bio is Tristan is a fashion photographer. He's associated with various photography workshops, seminars, and spark sessions.
Okay.
You know, I don't know what a spark session is. I should have Googled it, because now I'll seem uncool to all our cool listeners, you know, who don't use the word cool anyway, so I've just sort of shown how uncool I am by using the word cool.
Right.
But he does spark sessions, seminars, and photography workshops.
No, hang on. Sorry. No, back up. What exactly did it say about him, his little brief bio?
Well,
Tristan is associated with?
He's a fashion photographer, and he's associated with various photography workshops.
Yeah, associated with, meaning he's attended some.
Ah.
Hasn't learned anything, but he's attended some. That's why he's associated with them.
It shows. He's associated. He was the pain in the ass at the back of that workshop.
That's right.
He's been mentioned by many photography tutors because he's that pain in the ass. But the great thing is, though, he did have the SLR camera with the single lens reflex system. He had the professional one with him.
He's the one that was at your workshop last weekend that was asking all the technical questions.
He's
with
the one. Yeah. What's this on-off switch, man, on my flash? he had us both stumped.
That is just classic.
And the thing is, the internet is just filled with this stuff, you know.
And that's a sad thing. Like, to someone who doesn't know what they don't know,
exactly.
You know, they can end up in the hands of an idiot like this, and then wonder why their product photography is not improving.
Exactly. Yeah, go out and buy yourself the professional camera and you'll get the professional results if you have the perfect lighting and play around with your exposure enough until it comes out okay.
Just make sure you open the curtains wide enough so you got enough light.
Curtains? What about the curtains? We shouldn't pick on him. He's meaning well. He's not probably not meaning well. I don't know. Yeah. He might be just delusion. But yeah, and so yeah, said, yeah, you're spot on though. It's like, yeah, and this goes for everything I say to people as well. And I was reiterating this today at a workshop when I was talking about composition. Is that this is just opinion? Yeah, you don't listen to it if you don't want to. It doesn't. Yeah. Everything I say to you is just my thoughts, right or wrong.
Yep.
You know, I believe them. I feel they're right, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yep. I'm exactly the same with sign language, the other podcast that I do, which is an audio-related podcast. You know, and I'll discuss different, you know, recording techniques and mixing techniques, and I'm always, almost in every episode, saying, look, you know, at the end of the day, this is just my take on it. This is how things work, but it doesn't mean that it's the right way or the wrong way. It's just
a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, we feel it's right, of course. We know it's right, but we can't say that to them.
Well, you know what works, but the things that you know are based on the experience that you've had with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But clearly this guy has not had a lot of experience with product photography.
No, but he's a fashion photographer, so how would he know?
Yeah, exactly. Hence why he's so familiar with the macro mode.
I'd love to see his top 14 tips for fashion photography. I'm gonna look it up and see what else I can find. See if I can find something else for next week. Joy, oh joys. So what else has been going on? Anything else you've come across of any excitement?
The one thing I did come across was the Fuji applying for a new patent for sensors with varying pixel sizes. So with a current design, every pixel element on the sensor is the same size.
Yeah.
And we use what's called a Bayer array, where there are two green photo wells for every four photo wells. So two are green, and then there's a blue and a red. And it's because of the human eye's, you know, sensitivity or lack thereof to green that we have twice as many green, you know, photo wells on the sensor for, you know, one red and one blue. And so what Fuji have done is come up with this idea of having still like a matrix of four photo wells, but the blue and the red are only about half the size of the other two photo wells, and the other two photo wells are one green and one white. And Fuji's contention is that by doing this, by having these larger photo sites, particularly for the green channel, You'll get better noise performance, i.e. less noise, in the green channel because the photo site is bigger on the sensor.
So would you call that a megapixel?
Maybe.
Yeah, look at the size of my megapixel. I went for the one megapixel camera to come. It's just got one megapixel in there. It's like another lens. It's just a whopping great big thing right in the center. It's one pixel.
That's called a window, dude. That's called a window. You just open it and look out.
It's like a snow globe on top of the sensor.
Anyway, it seems like an interesting idea, and in theory it makes sense, but I want to read up more, and I'd be keen to see where it goes. So
there's so much development in sensor technology at the moment, it seems. So
I think everyone's realised that, you know, we don't need to cram more photo sites onto a sensor. I think we've reached the saturation point.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. We said there hasn't been any real incremental growth in the last 5 years or so.
I don't think there's anything to be gained by cramming more on there.
My phone's got 41 megapixels.
Yeah, but what's the noise like?
Oh, but the volume it turns it up to, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting to see people looking for new ideas and better ways of doing things. So,
yeah, no. I think that's where the biggest change is going to be is certainly in sensor technology, as far as the way they see the light, especially once again, as we know, the low light sensitivity is going to be a huge change. It's pretty exciting times.
Yeah.
As Richard said, Richard Clark said last year, he said, how has digital photography changed photography? And I said, it really hasn't, but it's going to.
Yeah.
And this is where it's starting to happen. Now we're really starting to understand the vision and how sensors envision stuff as well. It's changing an awful lot, which is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very pleased.
Anyway, the link for that will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to read up more to see what exactly it is that Fuji are doing with their design.
We had a lovely comment this week.
Oh, did we? I missed that. Was that on Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay.
From Dave Foggan.
Yeah?
This is number 8, apparently.
Right.
It was more the fact that it was about the style of the show that we do.
Oh, okay.
And I said, what, crap? And it was more, I think he was more along the lines of, it's like two blokes having a chat.
Funny that.
Yeah. I thought it was very nice. It's very insightful. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, we don't really have an agenda. We don't sit and have, you know, pre-show planning meetings. We show up 2 minutes before to recording time and say, oh, we've got nothing to talk about. Let's just fudge it for an hour. Yeah. We're just having a chat every week about photography and a few other people listening. Yeah. A few other people listening, but I think it's really nice. I think it's a nice place to be for our wee podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
A fair degree of unpretension.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
So that was, I like that. Yeah.
Cool.
Two blokes having a chat. Maybe we should rename it. Two blokes chewing the fat about photography.
Because that just rolls off the tongue.
I haven't finished the title yet. Two blokes chewing the fat about photography, thinking they know a little bit of something about it, but in reality they don't know very much at all, but they can fudge it for about an hour and occasionally accidentally put in some insightful information.
.com.
There you go. Now all I know is what that acronym spells out.
Oh, dear.
Now, I had a first today at my workshop today.
Oh, okay.
First, and out of the whoever knows how many workshops I've run,
yeah.
I had my first ever all-male workshop.
Wow.
First time ever there was no women's.
Wow.
And here's the weird thing. Half of the people there, their wives had bought them the
voucher.
The coat.
Wow.
Because it was an understanding your camera workshop, and men don't normally come to it because they don't ask for directions.
Yep.
But they'll do what their wife tells them to. Right. It was a very different feel. The whole workshop had a different feel to it.
Yeah,
it
was right.
A little bit more testosterone in the air.
Right.
It was like a bit of like a boys' club, which was just different.
And did you have a model?
No, not for Understanding Your Camera Workshop. I keep that. Well, we do. We have a pink rubber glove that I make them take photos of.
Right. You blow air into it.
A few months ago, I was doing this workshop and we're doing the introduction and I was finding out what people are there for. And this one guy says, I want to get really good at photography and I want to come to lots of workshops. And my wife said, if I come home with some really cool photos from this workshop, I can do lots more. I said, oh, dude, I'll never see you again. He goes, why that? And why is that? And I picked up the rubber glove and said, because this is what we're taking photos of. we put a black backdrop on the floor and a pink rubber glove on it, light it with window light. Yeah, we're doing product photography, of course.
Of course. With the macro setting.
Absolutely. What else would you use? And basically just show them how cameras get confused by unevenly lit scenes.
Right, you know? Yep.
And I'll teach them how to, how ISO affects an image, as far as shutter speeds, and then how to use exposure compensation to bring the detail back into the glove, which is washed out because the camera's seeing all the black. So we use this. This is, but yeah, it's really bizarre that, I say to everyone at this workshop, you're going to take some of the stupidest photos you've ever taken today. but the lessons beyond, we're doing are huge, but the actual photos are stupid. And the other half are me running around like an idiot.
Actually really clever. Because by having them shoot something as ridiculous as a pink glove on a black backdrop means they're not going to be distracted by the subject matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't work it, baby, work it, you're a target.
Exactly.
You're a glove.
And you can't get lost in, a gorgeous face or...
Look at the texture on that glove.
Yeah.
Yeah. And almost smell the rubber from here. But the joy and satisfaction in people's face when they nail it, it belies the fact they're taking a photo of a glove and a bit of black fabric, but they've achieved a photograph that was heretofore impossible for them to shoot half an hour previously.
So
the satisfaction is that even if the photo's stupid.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's legendary.
Well, it has its special moments. And occasionally I like to mix it up a bit. Occasionally I'll do a yellow glove.
Right.
because I like variety. I don't do the same thing every week.
Fair enough.
Shot. Oh, dear. So my week has been, I've had a mix between, still doing, what I used to call daddy daycare, but now it's just called parenting. Been looking after the kiddo for school holidays, running today's workshop, and the other thing, battling bloody Microsoft Office.
Oh, okay.
I went to the online subscription version a couple of months ago, and it's been a nightmare.
Really?
I don't know whether there's a bug in my Mac, which is possible.
There's your problem. You're on a Mac. It's Windows software, mate. It knows. It goes, this guy's running a Mac.
I've been running Microsoft Office Mac for 10 years. never a glitch.
Yeah, it's like trying to run iTunes on a Windows machine. You're just wasting your time. Absolutely.
But all of a sudden, it's been working for years, and all of a sudden, I'll try and save a Word document, and it'd say, we can't save it because your startup disk is full. I open up a PowerPoint presentation, half the images are missing, there's just red X's.
Ooh.
Here's the thing, you can't replace the images because it just comes up with an error.
Right. But
I can't move the images onto another a blank presentation and save it because it says you don't have user permission to save the presentation. Oh, and all this just, and so all my presentations are currently corrupt.
Wow. That's
which I run. I've got multiple backups of them in multiple locations, but if I open them up on this computer with this Microsoft Office, it destroys it.
Wow.
So I'm sort of pulling my hair out. So I'm in the midst of transferring everything over to Keynote at the moment. It's been the joy of my week. But I can't, I do all my invoicing on Microsoft Word.
Yeah, yep.
It's not working too well. That's causing all sorts of grief. I can't do Excel spreadsheets because everything to do with Microsoft Office since I went to the subscription, it's just come a cropper.
Wow, that's bizarre. Because I'm running the subscription version here at home. We bought the 1 year subscription where you get five installations.
Yeah,
the same. I think we've only used three of them so far. But
he's not
had no dramas at all.
Delete the one I've got and put another installation on.
Well, you could try that, But, I mean, the thing is, you should be able to deregister your current installation before you uninstall it, yeah, so that you still have five licenses to use.
Bloody hopeless, damn silly.
But that's really weird.
I hate computers.
Yeah.
Oh, I just hate them with a passion.
Yeah.
I love it. Love them when they work. Love them.
Yeah.
Love them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like anything. The second those things don't work, you know, I'm thinking about writing a complete guide to using computers in 8 steps. I know as much about operating computers as that guy did. So why not
switch your computer on by pushing the power button?
I'll be able to lead a few people astray. Anyway, what lots of other stuff going on. Let's see. I see Vivitar this week, or at CES just last week, yeah, announced they've got a version of the Sony iPhone lens, yeah, the little clip-on lens.
Oh yeah.
They've got their own version coming out of that, so
right,
I can see a whole range of this type of thing coming out, where there's sort of Bluetooth lenses with built-in sensors connect to eye devices or Android devices. And
so, excuse my ignorance, but have in the past Vivitar made camera lenses before? Like, I know they do flashes.
Well, they used to do lenses donkeys years ago. I mean,
right? Okay.
Vivitar is a brand name these days. It's just a marketing name.
Right. Okay.
For who knows who Chinese company.
Right. See, I only knew them for their flash guns.
Yeah, back in the 70s and 80s, they were famous for a thing called the Vivitar Series 1 lenses.
Oh, okay.
Which are effectively the high-end, fixed aperture 2.8 Pro lenses, great glass, great coatings and so on, but much cheaper than the Canon, Nikon, Minolta, etc. versions of the day.
Right.
Yeah, similar sort of build quality. So they were famous for these great quality lenses at a much cheaper price than, the brand name equivalent. So they were awesome for years, but yeah, like everything else, they slipped a cog and went in the wrong way, and digital sort of killed the company off. And it's been resurrected as a brand name a couple of times.
Okay.
So really, it's just a name. Who knows what actual brand who actually makes it? But it kind of goes for everything. Who makes iPhones? Who makes Android? Anything these days. It's not the name that's on it usually.
No.
But Vivitar have got a similar product coming out, which is kind of cool. And you can imagine it'd be significantly cheaper than the Sony one.
Yeah. More than likely. Yeah.
This is a cheap Chinese knockoff.
Yep.
But that was kind of cool. I saw that, speaking of Sony's next phone that's going to come out is going to be capable of shooting 4K video.
Crikey.
On a phone.
What?
Yeah.
Who needs 4K?
Well, I do.
Like, seriously? Really?
I do.
Have you looked at 4K, footage on a good TV?
I need 8K.
Oh, you don't.
I do. Do you know why?
Why?
So I can justify buying a new TV. Get a 4K TV. And then an 8K TV. Then who knows, maybe a 16K TV. It'll probably cost me 16K. Yeah. For 16K. But yeah, it's justify a better tool, dude. Yeah, and I need it. Yeah. My TV's like a year and a half old.
Yeah, right.
And it needs me a new one.
Yeah.
I've got to buy a new TV because it doesn't show my phone video quality. That's kind of bizarre.
But in all honesty, have you been to, JB Hi-Fi or Dick Smith or something and actually looked at a 4K TV?
Yeah.
And do you really see that much difference over full HD?
I think I see four times as much. Maybe 3.97 times. I don't know, but it's pretty close to four. Well, I've got younger eyes than you, Bruce.
Right.
And see more detail. More. The colour hasn't faded out in my eyes like that in yours, and I can see all the pow.
Okay.
No, honestly, I can't see much difference at all. But here's the thing, half the problem is they show a lot of animated stuff on these things.
Yes.
And you can't tell the difference animated between standard definition, 720, 1080, or 4K. It all looks pretty darn good.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So that's the little trick for people going to buy TVs. Don't let them show anything animated on the screen. Yeah, take your own.
And the other thing I hate when you go into one of those electronics retailers to look at TVs is when they have fast moving action movie promos running.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you can't move your eyes from one screen to the next and see the same thing because it's already changed to another scene. You need that slow-moving, you know, scenic photography or videography.
Someone should just film a fish tank for like 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd have that fish tank going on all the screens.
Yep.
That would be cool.
It would.
Go around. And the worst thing is that when they have like one DVD player and they have the image split over 40 TVs, so they all look worse than my 1974 Astoria TV, you know? And you're there trying to make a judgment call based on the quality of the TV, based on
the
degraded signal, you know?
Yeah.
I know as much about TVs as that bloke does about product photography. but as I sent the link through to you earlier, I saw an article this week on the lost Mount St. Helens photos that
were amazing.
Found. So what's his name, Blackburn? What was his name again?
Reed Blackburn.
Reed Blackburn, yeah. So we talked a couple of months ago about Reed, who, while shooting Mount St. Helens, realised, hang on a sec, I'm not going to get off this mountain alive, kept shooting, grabbed the film, tucked it under his body and saved it and protected the film. So he had these incredible photos of Mount St. Helens blowing up. Well, someone's found in his old office this week a roll of film that he shot a couple of weeks before that and from a plane of circling Mount St. Helens. And he was shooting that as it was bubbling away, getting ready to explode. He's come back from the flight, put the roll of film on the desk, and it sat there for 30 odd years.
That is just amazing.
Or in a drawer for 30 years, and they found this thing, got it developed, and the link there will show you some of the photos from it.
Yeah,
and cool.
That is just such a great story.
Amazing, yeah, remarkable. It's a remarkable addendum to. That other story we talked about, this sort of brings it a little more full circle. And it wasn't just that one instance, that one time he was there putting himself in danger. He was there over and over again and, kind of fleshes out the story a bit more.
You know, just as you were talking, I started to move through the slideshow of images. And the second image, I don't know if you looked at this one.
Oh, I didn't look at the thing.
Has a photo of his old Nikon camera looking pretty much the worse for wear. And it says... Colombian photographer Reed Blackburn's camera recovered from the Mount St. Helens blast zone in 1980. The film in it was too damaged to yield images, but an unprocessed roll of film shot by Blackburn before the eruption was recently found in a box at the Colombian.
That doesn't sound right. Maybe that one roll was no good and the other ones were.
Well, that was the thing. I thought the ones that he'd put in his backpack were okay. Maybe it was a case of the ones in the backpack were fine, but the one that was in the camera, didn't. Yeah, okay.
You can imagine the heat of the camera being an all-metal body.
Oh,
you
know,
maybe cooked it anyway. So, but that was... and I had a funny email exchange this week, which regular listeners will get a bit of a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
The marketing manager for Tamron Australia
sent
me an email.
Is that John?
He's the owner of the company. No, the marketing manager, Brendan.
Oh, okay.
Sent me an email. He's just come back from CES in America where he'd been talking to the marketing manager of Tamron USA and trying to get me to do more stuff for them over there sort of thing.
Right.
So he sent this email around trying to introduce her to me and me to her and so on.
Yep.
And in the blurb I read this, it said... I also gave Tamron a heads up to prepare themselves for the damage you'll inevitably do to your equipment whilst travelling. we explained to Stacey your propensity for introducing our lenses to hard surfaces. So which I thought was highly amusing. But what made it even funnier was, so that arrived like 11 o'clock on Monday night or something like that.
Right.
Monday afternoon, I shipped up a box of two lenses I've destroyed to him. He didn't know were coming. there's this lovely email introducing yourself that I will destroy your gear.
Your reputation precedes you.
It was just classic, mostly because I just sent up the 70-200 and the 24-70 I destroyed. and then I got the email back once he'd received them, got the lenses. With the Chiquina rear cap and the Sigma front cap on them.
Whoops.
Must have been cleaning those out of your bag, eh? My response, of course, was, you're lucky they had any lens caps at all. I know that it's not used them that much.
What you should have said was, yeah, I love my Tamron lens cap so much, I didn't want to send them back.
Sweet. There's a salesman, look at that. So in the meantime, while saying, well, here's you know, $2,500 or $3,000 of the destroyed lenses, send me some new ones. I also said, no, I also see you've got a new 150 to 600 coming out. Send me one.
So I've got send me one of those to destroy.
Pretty much. Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts for. So they're sending me down one of those, and the first shipment arrives in the first week of February, I think it is. So that'll be kind of cool.
Right. You'll end up as a beta tester.
to work out how
rugged they need to build their lenses.
If it can survive
is a week, it glin proof?
If it survived a week, it's going to do okay for everyone else.
Before you know it, they'll come out with a stamp on the outside of the box. This lens is glin proof.
Field tested. And by the worst in the business. But this new 150 to 600 on my crop sensor body, we're talking a 960mm lens.
Wow.
960mm 6.3.
Wow.
That's going to be some fun. That's going to be a hell of a portrait lens.
I was just about to say, be an awesome safari lens as well.
Oh, I could use that too, I guess. I've got a bikini beach shoot coming up.
Right.
And I'm serious. I love shooting 600mm lenses for bikini shots.
Okay.
Because of the way they see the world, the way they compress the world. Right. They're phenomenal. Right. It's hard to take a bad photograph with a 600mm lens for a portrait.
Do the women in these bikinis know they're being photographed?
Yes, but it takes me four people to relay the message to them. Yes, they do. We've got that kind of a thing issue. But yeah, so I'm hanging.
Glenn's up on the headland, looking down at the beach.
Don't make me cough.
Sorry, mate.
So that's coming out. I'll get that in a couple of weeks' time. So I'll give you a review on that when it comes through. And cool.
And what's the aperture at the wide end?
It's
wide being a sort of.
I think it's 4.5 to 6.3 or 5 to 6.3, something like that.
Okay,
which is pretty good. For the extreme range, and I read a product review on it, comparing it to the Canon 100 to 400, and it's on par quality wise.
Wow,
so that's pretty darn nice, you know.
That's cool.
I'll keep you informed with that as it comes out, and I might do a little video review of that, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came across this week an accidental sneak peek, I think, from Adobe of new Lightroom for mobile.
Oh yes, the iOS version.
Yeah, so Lightroom for your iPad, effectively. You know? Yeah, which will be could be interesting.
Yeah, for those who missed the story, it leaked very briefly on the Adobe website. It was one of those things where someone accidentally published it and then, you know, within 5 or 10 minutes realized that they shouldn't have and then pulled it down, but not before half the interwebs had captured a screen grab and, you know, posted it all over the place. So it appears that very soon there will be an iOS mobile version of Lightroom. So
it should be pretty darn cool. I mean, you think about it, if you're using your iPad, especially when the mega tablets start to come out. So, I mean, we're getting iPad minis and all the sort of smaller stuff, but soon we'll be getting bigger ones, like, you know, 12-inch and 16-inch types of devices. You'll be able to use that. It's basically a touch tablet but screen, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it'll give us some great editing capabilities, which will be awesome.
And particularly as more and more cameras, you know, start to incorporate like the Wi-Fi card type system, where, you know, you can transfer the images from the memory card in the camera wirelessly to your tablet while you're in the field.
Yeah.
To then be able to process there on the spot. And
absolutely. And process well and edit your RAWs, et cetera, and dump it out, and away you go. Pretty darn cool.
Because we all know, you know, it's absolutely critical that within 2 minutes of taking a shot, it must be on Facebook.
Yeah, scale down to one-tenth of what the quality it was a minute ago.
That's right.
Absolutely. Remember, everyone's got to have a sneaky peek of the photos that you're doing.
That's it.
You know how much I love the sneaky peek. Then I was having lunch with a person who will remain nameless from Fuji the other day.
Right.
hey, Lee, how you doing? And he accidentally let slip or showed me some images of the new Fuji SLR that's coming out next week or being announced next week.
Okay.
So January 28th, so a couple of days after this comes out. But it's a full-on old-school SLR. Yeah, man, yeah, full-on. It looks like an SLR. It's proper prism-looking jobby.
Okay.
Full dials, aperture dial, exposure compensation dial. The lenses, of course, have the aperture dial on them, I should say. So shutter speed dial on the camera. It looks seriously cool.
Right.
Electronic
viewfinder. You got a product number for it?
He told me, but I forgot.
Right.
Okay. That way it's a disclaimer that maybe I'm talking about something else because it's I think it's still under a non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
I know Fuji have been putting some sort of subtle advertising on the internet of coming announcement sort of thing.
Right.
But Fuji's also just announced the 56mm 1.2 lens to go with it.
Wow.
Which on their crop sensor cameras is effectively an 85mm 1.2.
Whoa.
Which should be...
Now, there's a portrait lens for you.
Yeah, so I reckon if you mix the new SLR with that, I'm hoping to get a hold of them when they come in and put them through their paces.
Mm.
But they look like a couple of sexy pieces of kit coming out. So
nice.
Said, lots of exciting toys for us photographers want to play with.
Mm.
I watched a friend of mine shoot the other day. Mother's group, yeah, me and a couple of the ladies where we drop the kids off at school, we sit and do the mother's group chat about the other parents and pick on the dresses that the other mothers are wearing and so on.
Right.
We bitch basically.
Yep.
But she's an amazing baby photographer.
Okay.
Remarkable, wonderfully talented, really sickening as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Her name's Kristen Cook. Wonderful photographer. And we're at a play center yesterday with my kid and her kid and another lady's kids. And we ended up back at Kristen's place and doing a photo shoot of all the girls, And it just reminded me, watching another photographer trying to deal with children of, these are six-year-old kids.
Yep.
Just why you should never shoot children. Never work with
children and animals.
You've got to make yourself look like a complete idiot.
Yep.
Yeah. I do that enough, not deliberately. I don't want to be doing that deliberately just for an income,
Yeah.
But to her credit, A, she got some lovely photographs, but B, she said, and this is why I don't shoot anything other than babies. Don't shoot the children. They drive you crazy. But it was like she's got nothing but natural light shooting. Just has one little room in her house, which has just got some beautiful natural light and just does her thing exceptionally well. Very simple, elegant photography. And it just reminded me just, once again, how simple you can make photography and how complicated so many people try to make it.
Yeah.
She's got three walls, because there's a corridor on the other end, so three walls, a window, and a bit of white cloth.
Yep.
And stunning photography. Yeah.
Nice.
We should all make an exercise in simplification for a while. I think just go out and just do it really simply.
Yeah,
just do the basic stuff and then just get gorgeous shots, Yeah, once again, you look at the stuff you're trying to do with this twirl. We have to get flashes out. We've got to complicate. Yeah. And look, and it's cool and it's fun, but sometimes just that simplicity of just a window and a face, is joyful.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's been my week. That's all the crap I've come across during the course of the week. Maybe we'll put in the product notes. Maybe we might put up the complete product photography tutorial guide for people
to
have a look at.
Well, please send me the link for that, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Now we've insulted it so much, I don't know if we should.
No, maybe not.
I am a little concerned. Don't want to be sued. But there's nothing I said that wasn't true. So can you be sued? If it's true, can you still be sued? Is it? Anyway,
I don't know.
And what's the rest of your week? So you've got.
Well, this weekend, Max and I are off to archery tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, which we do for 2.5 hours, and then tomorrow afternoon we'll be getting ready for the party on Sunday because it's Australia Day on Sunday. And I don't know if I mentioned to you, but we've been having over the last 2 weeks an extension to our veranda put on the side of the house. And this was Kath's pet project, and this extension to the veranda is absolutely enormous. We've extended the veranda. It now goes out a further 5 meters, and it's 10 meters long. It's 50 square meters. And the builder said to me, he said, you know that a granny flat is only 60 square meters, right? I swear, so, man.
You got a basketball court on there?
Man, pretty much. Yeah, it's like that. Funny. So, but the great thing is, you know, we have this, what has always felt like a really large outdoor table. It's about 3 meters long, and it has, you know, 8 seating positions, you know, the 3 chairs down either side, one on each end. And everywhere where we've had it, it's always felt quite large and cumbersome. And now, placed on the, you know, on this new deck, it's like, oh, finally we've got an area where this table doesn't feel cramped and you can actually get to all 8 seats without having to climb over people, you know. So it's
very nice.
we're having an Australia Day party, you know, that is also an unveiling of the new deck party. So yeah, so
well,
that's
you enjoy your invasion party, don't you?
We'll do.
To help you feel good about yourself. That's all I'm saying.
Definitely. Yeah. All right, mate. Will you have a good week?
I will, and I shall talk to you all very soon.
All right, mate. See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Shutters Inc., another audio2u.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com. We'll be right back.